I'm a great lover of musical theatre. So in lieu of a sermon today, I'm just going to do a selection of numbers from Joseph and the... No, I'm not really. Just this last week, there was an episode of the new series of Star Trek called Strange New Worlds, which is back in the Captain Kirk days, where the whole thing turned into a musical and my heart was lifted. And it wasn't Joseph that made me think of this. It was Jesus Christ Superstar. I'm one of those of the era of the rock opera. And Kate Newman recently sent me a fantastic pastiche of a rock opera, which made me think back to the story of Herod in Jesus Christ Superstar. Herod is a ridiculous figure. He's sort of bumptious and rotund. No comparisons. And he appears wearing terrible sunglasses and kind of board shorts and an open dressing gown. So from the moment you see him, you know he's laughable. And he says to Jesus, "Jesus, I am very pleased to meet you face to face." And then he goes on, "You are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool." That's the point I want. I got there in the end. This is a ridiculous reduction of what the story we heard today is about. Reducing the powerful symbol of the sea and Jesus walking on it to the mundane level of a swimming pool. And reducing Jesus' miraculous works, these signs of the kingdom of God, from being signs and wonders to being parlor tricks, magic to draw in the gullible and manipulate opinion. But this overblown character of Herod does offer food for thought. The attitude that he holds probably mirrors the attitude of a lot of people today, gently mocking the event at the heart of today's story, Jesus walking on the sea, which is impossible and can be a source of difficulty for many Christians as they try and work out how miracles happened, to say nothing of the rest of the world. So we may ask ourselves quite legitimately, what happened on that occasion at the Sea of Galilee? Did Jesus really walk on the water? Or is that an embellishment of this story to make the early readers see Jesus again as more divine, more godlike? Only two of the four gospel writers mention this at all. Matthew and Mark. Today we heard Matthew's account. John and Luke either know nothing about it or choose to stay silent. And Matthew's version is quite different from Mark's version. Matthew adds the whole section about Peter getting out of the boat. Mark doesn't mention the disciples by name at all, but merely has Jesus walking on the sea. Presumably, Matthew has a point to make, and I might get to that in a moment. Matthew and Mark end their accounts quite differently. Matthew's account ends with Jesus climbing into the boat, the wind dying down, and those in the boat worshipping him and saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Mark also ends with Jesus climbing into the boat and the wind dying down, but then Mark adds a strangely cryptic comment. "And they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened." These, in both Gospels, these stories follow on from the story of the loaves and the fishes and the miraculous feeding of the crowd. Mark repeatedly despairs about people whose hearts are hardened, whose eyes are closed, or whose ears are stopped. Many of the healing miracles in Mark's gospel are those giving sight to the blind or hearing to the deaf. It seems to be, in that gospel, something of a setup, a way to encourage the reader to think, "Oh, they didn't get it, but I do, and I see who Jesus truly is," and then to grow in faith. Matthew is somewhat blunter. "Truly you are the Son of God." But what is the purpose of this miracle story? What can it do? What can it say for us today, 2,000 years later? Can this miracle of walking on water still speak to us today? And if so, what? Well, first, I encourage us to move away from a reductionist literal way of engaging with this story, trying to find out how it could work, whether there was an invisible sandbank a few inches under the sea or whatever. Consider it instead as a parable, as a story with many layers and many possible meanings within it, meant to speak to us at different times in different ways. So it might help us to consider both its context when this gospel was written and our own situation as we encounter this story as community. Matthew was writing 40 to 50 years after the death of Jesus at a time when the church was suffering persecution. And he's particularly concerned to encourage faith and steadfastness in his hearers. In verse 31 of Matthew 14 that we heard, when Jesus says to Peter, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Matthew uses a verb which is only found in his gospel, which is only used by him to describe disciples whose faith is not as deep as it should be. A word to the early burgeoning church, perhaps, particularly as it faces this time of persecution. In the story, we see Peter as the only one willing to hop over the side out of the boat to be with Jesus. But out on the unstable water, with the wind even stronger without the protection of the boat, Peter panics. Perhaps we're being encouraged not to see Jesus' power as some kind of external force that can do magic that we can tap into and use as we please, rather than trying to get close to Christ's power by sheer force of will, as Peter seems to be doing. Instead, we're encouraged to reach our hand and call to Jesus, and recognize that the walking on the water here is done not by any kind of magic power, but as a disciple of Jesus with the hand of Christ. We are presented with a story that's not about believing the right things or trying to prove that something happened and thereby being able to achieve anything, a kind of Christian approach to manifesting our desires. We are presented with a story that encourages us to hold to our faith, to reach out to Christ and allow God to work in us and through us, rather than despite us or around us. That's why I think Peter is so strongly rebuked for failing to work with Jesus and trying to do this by himself rather than recognizing his part in the greater work of the divine. In other stories in our Gospels, the wind and waves are often used as symbols of the storms that go on within and around us, the troubles we face, the anxieties we hold, the fears which bind us. We are challenged to live not from those places, but from the peace which is promised through the love and grace of God. That peace which is meant to be made manifest within the Christ community that is the church. We are also called to lean on one another, rather than to rely on the rugged individualism our Western society seems to idolize. We are called to relationships of trust, compassion, love, honesty, gratitude, grace. These are the things that speak out against the fear, the anger, the polarization, the exclusionism, the division, the inequity, the injustice which plague our world. The fears which cause us to build barriers, the negative self-interest that calls us to exclude, the imbalance that divides rich and poor, the anxieties which cause us to turn inward rather than looking outwards as community. All of these are the things that threaten to swamp and engulf us. In our gospel stories, Jesus is never swamped by the waves, never in danger of drowning. Even the winds and the waves obey him, they say. So he brings peace to each situation. And for those of us who seek the way of Christ, the way of love, we too are given a firm foundation of love and grace. For if we keep our eyes and our hearts and our minds fixed on the life and the love of Christ, we can find ourselves fixed firm whatever life throws at us. I believe this story, this parable, is not here to believe or not believe, to prove or not to prove, but to encourage us to reach out to the divine, to trust in God's companionship through the storms, to grow in our relationship to Christ, in order that we too may stand fast whatever we encounter, and that we may know the deep peace of Christ as together we seek to bring transformation to this world. Thanks be to God.